never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you need everyone to think you are.
What's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, where we discuss topics that feed your mind, your spirit, and your soul. I am Melly Mel, a.k.a. Melissa.
And I'm Blue. Just Blue. I'm tired, guys.
You had a nickname, though. You had, like, you know, a whole...
B Drizzle.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now I just feel like Blue. It's cold in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved here, you guys told me it was going to be the land of sunshine and palm trees. I'm wearing a heavy...
There's still palm trees outside. It's just 60...
They're swaying.
It's just 60
degrees.
Covered
in frost. Yeah, I'm cold.
Yeah, no, the winters here in L.A.
are real.
I mean, it's not exactly, you know, Boston.
Well, come on, yes, it's not 18 feet of snow,
yeah,
but I
it's
should...
it's not Canada.
You know.
But it's still jarring how cold it gets, because I mean,
got bitch slapped by the wind on the way over
yeah,
here.
This That's is the fine. Desert. This is the desert. It gets quite frosty. Literally, at night, when I walk Daisy, I wear my Canada Goose. People think I'm crazy, but I don't care because my blood is thin at this point.
Yeah, I don't like being cold in Los Angeles. I feel like I've been duped.
Yeah, it's something. So today's episode, I hope that I don't cry my eyelashes off. Because it's going to be a little bit more of a serious, you know, subject matter that we discuss. Recently on Hollywood Unlocked, I was discussing with Jason his book. It's called God Must Have Forgotten About Me. And I've always known just how the tumultuousness of his relationship with his mother, who's passed on. And recently... I've been very transparent about things that have been going on in my life as it relates to my mom. We did a whole episode, you know, about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And I started the episode talking about finding out that my mom was diagnosed with cancer while I was really, really angry with her. And, you know, I asked, you know, you and I asked you, you know, is there a place for my anger when I am suddenly confronted with this information, you know, about my mom?
Very well, yeah.
And since then, I went home to Toronto for the Christmas season, and I basically spent Christmas in the oncology unit of Princess Margaret Hospital. My mom had to get blood work done. She had to get CAT scans. She had to get chemotherapy. Seeing my mom was jarring because she has lost so much weight. And it just broke my heart every single day. My heart just was breaking. Like, and I was trying to be so tough for my mom, you know, like just, you know, stoic because, you know, she's Russian Norwegian, so therefore so am I. So I always have this, you know, game face on, and I never want to let anybody see a crack in the facade and stuff like that. But it just was getting harder and harder to, like, keep the mask on because I was confronted with the very real possibility that my mom's not going to be around much longer. And I can't.
It makes you aware of your mortality.
Yeah.
And one of the things I remember we talked during that time, and I was saying, I was like, you know, while you were going through that with your mother, my cousin who just lost her mother last year,
mm-hmm.
Was with me for the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that we kept talking about was she wished that she had had those moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be in the hospital, to at least feel like they had their last moments together to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's as painful as it is, there's a gift that you see this coming and you guys get to have those moments.
Yeah.
And you're actively making memories together. It's a painful and bittersweet gift.
Yeah.
But there are people who would kill for that. And so I think it was beautiful. Like whenever you would give me an update about you and your mom, I was like, that's beautiful that you get to, like, be so thoughtfully engaged with her, knowing that every moment has to count in that way.
It threw so much into perspective. You know, just the fact that you know, Christmas is like, you know, the next to Valentine's Day, you know, it's
a painful.
No, it's a consumer's dream. You
yes,
know what I mean?
Like,
it's a very materialistic holiday. And it was pointless. The whole concept of Christmas was completely pointless to me because of what I was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the oncology unit and I was looking at people who had different forms of cancer, different stages of cancer, different stages of treatment, chemotherapy, radiation. Many of them had lost their hair, A lot of them looked very gaunt. It was sobering, to say the least. And it just, it was really, really, really difficult to keep, you know, to think positively. And, you know, my mom made a lot of decisions for me while all this is going on that just made it even harder.
Did you let yourself cry?
I cried every time my bedroom door was closed.
But you didn't let her see you cry. Like, what are you shielding her from?
We still have to get to our guests.
All right, so we'll pull back so we can get through. It's going to be a real episode, but there's a lot of people who are dealing with this and who need to see this. And so,
yeah,
it all serves a purpose.
So, yeah, let me give you guys a little bit of backstory on our guest. So we've all heard of birthing doulas, professionals who assist women who reject the dogma of conventional medicine and birth their children at home during a ceremony. Well, death doulas are at the opposite end of the spectrum. They prepare the terminally ill and their families for the inevitable. And their goal is to provide a safe space for patients and their families to feel as comfortable about the process of transition as possible. Death is unavoidable, and it happens to the best of us. So on today's episode, we introduce you to Alua Arthur, who's an attorney and CEO of Going With Grace, an organization that practices and trains people to become death doulas. Bringing awareness to death and dying, that's the goal of Going With Grace. So sit back and listen, but you may want to grab a box of tissues with your glass of wine today, folks. It's going to be a doozy. Okay, so we have Alua Arthur joining us.
Yay! I'm so happy.
This has been kind of a long time coming. So we originally wanted to schedule her in December. And I don't know, we kind of thought that maybe that might not be a good idea because of the holidays. But then I thought about the statistics of how sad people are during the holidays and how suicide rates skyrocket. And I thought that you might have a perspective that might help people kind of, you know, develop coping mechanisms with the onset of depression during that time. But Blue and I were having a conversation, I guess probably about what my mom is going through. My mom is stage 4 cancer. And she started talking to me about a death doula that she followed. And I was just like, oh my God, wait, what? Hold on 1 second. What? Tell me everything.
Just that title, but like whoever came up with the term death doula, it's brilliant because it makes you lean in like, say what now?
Yeah.
Those are two, like you think they're diametrically opposed realities, like death and doula.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because 2 years ago, my aunt gave us 12 hours notice that she was dying.
Wow.
So they found out in the morning and by the nighttime she was gone. And wow. It was like stunning and shocking and a little bit jarring, to put it mildly. And I disappeared from work for about 2 weeks. And my managing editor, she hit me up and she was like, hey, this is someone that we actually were going to ask you to look into potentially writing about. It now feels like a really awkward time to suggest this. So don't write about it, but just like maybe watch this video. And I watched your video and you were so joyous. And I was like, what's happening? We're mm-hmm. talking about death. Why are you so happy? I can see all your teeth. Like, what's going on? And then like, by the time the video was over, I was like, death is a part of life. That makes sense. Death means that you should probably celebrate life more. And suddenly my wheels started turning and your logic, I'm a journalist, I like to pick things apart. It made total sense. Like there was nothing illogical about it.
Great.
And it's so crazy now because I went from someone who was scared of death, and when I first heard about you, had never been to a funeral, until my aunt's. And now when you come into my house, there's a huge picture of a skull with roses growing out of it.
Wow.
Because of you, because I feel like death has taught me how to live my life even better.
Wow.
So I'm kind of emotional having you here because you're the reason why I don't fear death anymore.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She's the reason that big ass picture in my bedroom.
Yeah.
It's because of her, because I see death differently now.
Incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Child.
That's so incredible, Blue. I didn't know the depths of which.
It was bad. Death was like my biggest fear. I had family members dying left and right, and I refused to go to their funerals until I found you.
Yeah, it's I mean, I'm confronted with something that most people don't want to think about, and that is their mom. And, you know, our parents are our superheroes, you know, they are indestructible to us. However, my father died when I was almost 16 years old, and he was a big, huge, hulking man. And to see disease ravage his body over the course of 5 years to where he was like an empty shell of the, you know, the bear he once was, did something to me at the age that I was. I carried around a lot of guilt because I didn't feel like I was as present as I should have been. But I had to give myself a break. It took me years, decades, to give myself a break that I was a 15-year-old girl.
Exactly.
And your priorities are a little fucked up at 15, you know? So taking on the responsibility of a dead parent is almost too much. But now here I am at the age of 43, and my mom, who I haven't had the closest relationship with, is confronted with stage 4 cancer, and the guilt is threatening to like kill me all over again. And so I'm gonna try really hard to get through this episode. I really thought that having you here on the show would give me a perspective that I might not be able to see just yet. Like, Blue,
your timing is impeccable.
Yeah. Like, I'm a journalist. I'm an investigator. I like to get to the root of things. I like to tear them apart in order to get to the nucleus. And I'm hoping that something that you say today just resonates enough that I can make it through this situation with my mom. Cause it's like, I can't stop crying.
And share with our audience what a deaf doula does, because again, that term,
all of the above,
sure,
is completely mind blowing.
Like, how did you start being a deaf doula? You started going with Grace. All of the above. You're an attorney.
Yeah,
we're obsessed with you. Tell us everything.
Yes, tell us everything.
First of all, I'm so excited to be with you guys, and thank you so much for sharing that. I want to say, well, I'm curious what the guilt is about, but also just big picture, it's a really tough situation you're in. Like you talked about your father, it's almost inconceivable that our parents will die.
Yeah.
And particularly when they are ill and elderly or dying for, it's the most confusing. And really, it's hard to get your head around. Like it's an existential crisis almost, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. our parents are the things that brought us into this earth, and they're the things that are supposed to root us here.
That's it. You said exactly what I've been saying. I do not know how to exist on this planet without my mom being here. My mom grounds me to this earth. So if my mom isn't here, like what? Like my whole existence gets thrown into question.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I also want to say that what you're talking about, at least what I'm hearing a little bit of it, is something called anticipatory grief, where you are grieving it before it's happened.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm trying to prepare.
Yeah. But the reality is that we are never properly prepared, right? Mm-hmm. All the emotion that you're feeling now is in anticipation of this death occurring and the grief that you'll feel then. Whereas you're also grieving the relationship that you had with her before, I'm sure. All the things that you know will no longer come afterward.
Yeah.
Like you're already deeply grieving this thing that it will happen at some point, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's tough.
It's more than tough, because I can't stop my mind from thinking about everything. Like, you know, my mom is selling our house. The house I grew up in as a child. I was just like, are you kidding me, lady? Like, cancer wasn't enough. You got to sell the house too.
Yeah.
It was almost comical how fucked up it was, you know? And when I'm already crying, so I may as well just say this part, because this was just horrifying in how selfless she was, because then the guilt hit me all over again. But I said to my mom, why are you selling the house right now? She just said, Melissa, there was no way that I could have something happen to me and you have to pack up this house.
Wow. Wow. Bless her for that.
That's beautiful, Melissa. You have to see the beauty in that, the selflessness that she's still momming you even while she's going through this. And I'm sure, like with a lot of people that you work with, you see these moments, like the anticipatory grief and like the idea of preparing for death. People almost feel as if it means they're begging it, they're courting it, right? So how do you deal with people who come to you and seek your guidance, but they're scared that just conjuring you up is gonna make death come faster, as if you're some kind of, like, you know what I mean, like a witch? People get really superstitious around this stuff.
Incredibly.
If I talk to a death doula, does that mean death's gonna find me next week? Like, how do you deal with all that? Because you're so joyous.
You just
so
stay
weird.
Real about it, right? Yeah. Like, people are even so afraid to say things like, I'm gonna die, because they think it's gonna make it happen. Well, it will at some point for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And so me saying I'm gonna die doesn't mean it's gonna happen tomorrow. It's gonna happen someday. It might happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so staying in, like, in the possibility of it, and also staying very real with the fact that death is looming for all of us at any point.
Yeah.
Realistically.
No, trust me, I know it loomed very much for me a year and a half ago. I was hit by a truck on the 134 and my Jeep flipped five times. So I almost died. So the last year and a half has been challenging. So, you know, me almost dying, recovering, coming back to work, and then my mother, cancer, selling the house. I didn't think I was going to make it by the at the end of last year. I did not think that I was going to make it. I felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. And so this, you know, meeting you was really important to me, because I think for our audience as well, because I know, you know, after I shared what was going on with my mom, a lot of people reached out. You know, a lot of people told me about their situation, you know, their parents, you know, either suffering and perishing from cancer, or, you know, going through the whole treatment and coming, you know, coming out of it with remission and stuff like that. But just the overwhelming sense of sympathy that I was given. But talk to us about your clients. Who reaches out to the to you and asks for your services? Is it the patient, or is it the family, or is it both?
It's both.
Okay.
It's either or, but I get both. And I'll say that the last seven clients have been daughters calling for their mothers.
Okay.
Which I find fascinating. I mean,
why?
Why do I find it fascinating?
Yeah. Like, what about that dynamic do you find fascinating, that the daughter's calling for their moms? And does their mom know that they're calling?
Yes.
Is this a decision they've made together?
Yes.
Okay.
More often than not, it seems like mom is starting to understand that her life is wrapping up, and she's having conversations about it with her daughter, and her daughter's not ready to receive it, but daughter's trying to do the daughter thing and give mom as much support as she can through the process. And so they call me, I come in, have a conversation with mom. How are you doing? What's going on? How are you feeling? What are your visions for the end of your life? What are your visions for your relationship with your daughter through this process? How are you going to continue to mother her through this process? Reminding both to stay in their mother-daughter roles as much as possible, because often we
switch.
Or caregiver-patient roles.
Yeah.
And we still need to be mothers and daughters through the process as much as possible.
My mom was definitely fighting for that.
To stay your mother.
Yeah, very much so, yes.
Yeah, well, she still is, right? Until the minute she's
very
gone.
Much so.
And even afterward.
I don't want to swap the roles. I am very comfortable being the child.
Yeah.
You know? It's
What services do you provide when they call you in? Like, so when someone comes to you, what do they receive from you? Like, I know the counseling part, just having someone who can be soothing and talk to them is energetically already a healing in itself. So what does that look like when someone reaches out to you? What do they expect to receive from you? Because some people are like, what are you going to do? Death is death. Like, they can't conceptualize being empowered around death.
Yeah. Well, the needs really depend on what the particular family circumstances are, right? But services are offered in a bunch of different ways. When people are still healthy, because I work with healthy people as well. When people are still healthy, I help them complete comprehensive end-of-life plans.
Fascinating.
Like, kind of like what your mom is doing with the house, but like when there isn't cancer. So people getting really clear on, you know, what kind of decisions they might want to be made for them when they die, who their decision maker is going to be if they can't make decisions on their own anymore, what they want for their services. What are all your passwords? Do you have a safe someplace that nobody else knows how to open? What about your animal? Who's going to take care of this? Your children, where are their passports? You know, making sure that we get all the information in one place.
Wow.
So that when the time comes, it's easy to get to. So we're not then also struggling to try to understand all of this. So that's when people are healthy. I also help people work through death anxiety, through death meditations. I offer a course online that works through people, works through death anxiety in a meditation. And then when people are getting close to the end of life, meaning that they know what disease is probably going to kill them, we help them do a number of things. Either we're helping them prepare the death space, like where they're going to die. We're helping them heal their relationships. We're helping them get clear on the ideas about the afterlife, if any at all. We're just supporting them in having as peaceful a death as possible. Mm. And that also means making sure that the people around them feel supported through the process, right? Because it's tough. Like, even with me there, it's tough.
What? How does religion factor into what you do? Because I'm sure that
afterlife and that whole conversation.
Exactly. Right. I'm sure that, you know, people from all walks of life, all different faiths and beliefs come to you. Or maybe they don't. Maybe there's just a specific, you know, maybe your clientele is way more open-minded than, say, like a Roman Catholic or something like that. Or do you get everybody?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. The work is secular.
Okay.
So I'm working with any religion, anybody that wants some support in how they die. How religion comes up is people's ideas about the afterlife and also what should be done with the body when somebody dies. Mm-hmm. And so that's where sometimes it gets tricky when you have somebody dying of one faith tradition and their family of another. And then it's like, what are you supposed to do?
Yikes, you're right.
Well, you do your best to honor the wishes of the person that's dying because you're going to die at some point, so you can do it your way when it's your turn. Mm-hmm. You know? Often also when talking about the questions of the afterlife, I find that even the most religious people, no matter the religion, still have questions. Mm-hmm. Like people are still like, well, if you think of it this way, it's just a belief system that we have. Faith is nothing but a set of beliefs. Mm-hmm. And a belief remains just a belief until it's tested, until there's some evidence for it. Then it becomes a fact, or it becomes something real. But it's not tested yet, but it's about to get tested when you're getting close to death, right? Mm-hmm. You're about to find out what the truth is.
Yeah.
And that makes people really question their belief, because it's like, well, what if this isn't...
What if I've been believing something my entire life and it was BS?
What if I've been sitting up in church every Sunday for my entire life and it means nothing? Mm. People ask these questions all the time, even the most religious people. And so that's always an interesting conversation. Like, well, what do you believe? And what were you taught to believe? And what do you think might happen? What experiences have you had while you're living that have given you any indication about what happens
afterward? What do you tell somebody like that? What do you tell a diehard Pentecostal Christian who has lived their life, you know, according to that faith, which is, you know, for the most, it's pretty, you know, intense. It's pretty rigid. And then they come to the end of their life and they're sitting with you and they're questioning, what if I was wrong the whole time? What is your response to something like that?
I sit with them in it.
Okay.
What if you were? What would that mean? Mm-hmm. What do you think might be possible other than what you've been taught to believe? What communication, if any, have you had with people that have died that has changed what you might believe?
Mm-hmm. That's smart, because you're making them still own it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of times people want answers because they don't want to own the fear or the questions. And so... She pivots. That's brilliant.
It's not.
I'm going to use that in my personal life.
Do it.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Well, here's the thing, right? We're all looking for answers. Mm-hmm. And particularly when it comes to death, everybody wants to know how they're supposed to do this, what it is, when it's coming. We want answers. There are none.
Right.
None.
Right.
Aside from that, it's going to happen. We don't know when. We don't know where. We don't know how. We don't know why. We know nothing about it. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's going to come. And people want a death doula or somebody who does this work to tell them the answers.
To be a psychic.
I don't have the answers. I'm not a witch, and I'm certainly not a psychic. You know what I mean?
They probably think you are a witch. Like, come here, doula. Tell me the exact
thing. Tell me the answer, doula. And I normally have locks, and so all the jewelry, and they think I'm just going to, like,
they're like, oh my gosh, my magical Negro. Come tell me all the answers.
Magical African.
They love doing that, totally. Though. We have a joke. We call it the magical Negro, where a lot of stories, there'll be this magical black person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like in Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Michael Clark Duncan. This big magical black man.
No, that was a Green Mile.
Yeah, Green Mile. There you go. Like, this big magical black man will just come and, like, be heartwarming. Like, really? Or he could just be having a bad day like everybody else.
Right.
I have a question, though. If you could right now find out the exact moment and circumstance of your death, would you want to know?
That's so great.
Because we're addicted to knowing. Would you
want
to know?
I wouldn't want to know either.
I would not want to know.
I am on the fence.
Tell me why.
Because I might want to plan a party.
Do it anyway.
No, but I want to plan a party that's well timed. I want to have a dramatic exit. Like, I already know my
meaning. Like, you like die at the end of the party. All right, like, thank you all for coming in.
Like New Year's 10, 9. Like, I want a whole party.
Amazing.
You know what's the crazy thing is? I almost died when I was 8 years old.
What happened?
This is where religion comes in, guys. But you know, I'm Haitian Cuban. I'm clairsentient. I'm a little witchy. And my grandmother died under circumstances that have been hotly debated. Okay. Someone thinks there was a root put on her. Other people just think her heart just stopped at 42.
You know.
So my family has always been really, really like funny about who we let around us, because magic is something that runs in our family. Mm-hmm. I actually, when I was 8 years old, went to a friend's house, and her grandmother had a friend from back in Haiti who actually is related to the person who we think might have hurt my grandmother. Mm-hmm. Saw me, recognized my cheekbones, and was like, "What's your last name?" Told her my last name. She walked up to me and she touched my forehead and my face got hot. I was like, "Well, that's odd." I come home, I'm eating a cinnamon bun, my mother's washing the dishes, and I say, "Hey, Mom, I ran into some weird old lady who asked me what my name was. This is what was her name." I saw my mother's back tense up because she recognized the name. The plate that she was washing dropped to the floor. I said, "Mom, what's that?" And then I blacked out and I passed out.
Wow.
I was under for 2 weeks. I missed New Year's, missed Christmas, and they had to make some phone calls to bring me back.
Wow.
I just remember lots of spiritual baths. Mm. And this is the funny thing is I wasn't religious at the time. And apparently whatever had gotten my grandmother...
Wow.
Was trying to get me. I just remember like literally waking up and being covered in like Florida water and stuff and then like passing out again.
Yeah.
And for 2 weeks I was completely out cold. I thought I was going to die. And then they prayed and prayed and prayed. And then I woke up one day like on the 8th of January randomly. And I was like, "Hey, I'm hungry. Like, I'm a little kid. I don't know this stuff."
Right.
And so my family was always like, "Oh man, she's the one in the family with the gift." And we later found out that I was a clairsentient. Because they always go after the gifted for some reason. And I, even as an adult, if it hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't believe it. I'm a journalist. I'm a skeptic, right? And one of the things that moment taught me was like death is one of those things where you never know. And I always regret missing that New Year's. I always regret missing that Christmas. I was like, I wish that I had known something was going to happen to me, because there's a million things I would have done differently that day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have eaten a cinnamon roll. Maybe I would have had a better plate of food. Like a lot of things run through my mind. And so I've always thought like if I ever had a chance, I'd want to plan my own funeral. If anybody who loves me is watching, My Way by Frank Sinatra, that's the song I want you guys to play. But no, like I've always thought that death is one of those things where if you have a warning, you get to make every moment count. Mm. So I think I would want to know. Mm-hmm. But it'd be joyous though.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be sad. It would be joyous. Which is why I keep telling you, Melissa, the fact that you know that something might be coming, mm-hmm. I want you just like suck the life out of every moment with your mom.
The fact is that there's just so many layers to the situation, you know, like it's to the point where we did an episode about forgiveness, and after spending Christmas with my mom, I wanted to erase the episode because of things that I said during that episode. I expressed how angry I was at my mom for something that she had done earlier in the year 2019, and my mom started calling me more than usual, calling, texting, emailing, and I refused to speak to her. I refused to answer. And she was calling to tell me that she was sick. Mm. And so that's the guilt.
That's the guilt.
That's the guilt, is that my anger was more important to me than finding out that my mom was ill. And I found out in beginning of November, maybe end of October, when she knew in April. And so I was furious with myself. I was furious at my level of arrogance and coupled with ignorance. What a fucking double whammy of bullshit.
What are you, God, though? Like she's not a psychic and neither are you.
I
have no way of knowing, Melissa.
Hindsight is a motherfucker. That's what I'll say. Hindsight is just... it plays tricks on us,
yeah, it does.
You know, and that's where a huge amount of our guilt is rooted, mm-hmm. is in hindsight, knowing something after the fact and thinking I should have known better.
Absolutely.
You know, and so that's basically where the guilt has come from. And then seeing, you know, asking my mom, like, why are you selling the house? Because to me, it meant you're giving up, you're resigning. And I can't deal with my mother, this fucking Viking of a woman, giving up. I can't deal, because that's saying something. That's making a definitive statement to me. And she's just such a self-contained woman, you know. She's got her Aquafit, she's still got a library card, she has her activities, you know, she's got her garden. These are the things that make my mom my mom. And she decorated our house and refurbished it and everything like that. And it was such a source of pride to her. So for her to sell it just said so much to me that I just was not prepared to deal with. Mm-hmm. And when I asked her, like, why are you selling the house? Meaning, like, why are you giving up? Mm-hmm. When her response was to give it to you. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want it. I don't want it. Just stay the way you are.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want. I want her to stay the way she is. And I'm having the most difficult time dealing with this level of change. It's just too much. Mm-hmm. I'm ridiculously resistant, as you can see, you know. And
you must see this a lot. Like, what she calls giving up, someone calls surrender.
Yep.
So how did you get, like, how did this become your job? Like, I still want to know, like, we were just talking to someone earlier about purpose, right? Like, there's something beautiful about knowing your purpose. This is clearly your purpose.
Clearly.
How did you find out this was your purpose?
Yeah.
Like, how does one find out that the universe wanted them to be a deaf doula?
It was really specific. I was practicing law at Legal Aid for a while, but I'd grown really depressed in my work. Deeply, deeply depressed.
I can understand
things
that.
Things just weren't working.
Yeah. Right.
And even though it's work that you think otherwise feels good in the spirit, which it did on some level, I knew it wasn't using all parts of myself. Like, my sensitivity, I couldn't show it in court. Like, I caught myself crying one time at a domestic violence hearing, and it was like, girl, this is not No, you can't do this.
Right.
So I was like, something isn't working. All parts of myself aren't being used. And in that depression, I started meditating in earnest one day and thought about Elian Gonzalez from the 90s.
I remember. Yeah.
I remember.
So he's on my mind a lot. Yeah. Exactly. So I started thinking about Cuba. And went to Cuba.
Oh, my dad's from Cuba.
I love Cuba.
I do too.
It's just so alive, right? And that's something that I was not when I went there. Mm-hmm. I was dead inside for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. So I went to Cuba during this depression. And I went out one night with this woman. And in the morning, I needed to return something to her. Mm-hmm. And along the way, a car almost hit me on the street. Mm-hmm. And I slammed my hands on the hood and immediately was like, get it together, girl.
Right.
Get it together. Come on.
Right.
I got in a bus later on that day, and there was a woman in line for the bus who told me I should get in a different line to get my ticket. So I do, and I see her watching our bags and then trying to get our bags on the bus. And I thought, this is so strange. She was a German woman also, like, pretending she didn't speak Spanish, or like her Spanish was so broken that it wasn't even really broken, you know what I mean? Eventually I got on the bus and learned that she had uterine cancer. Mm-hmm. And was on this trip to see the top 6 places in the world she wanted to see before she died. And so we talked a lot about her life. And then I started to ask her a lot about her death, because I was like, yo, this disease might kill you. Like, she was just a couple of years older than I was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, during that bus ride, I felt really sad and frustrated that there was nobody that was supporting her in this way. She had a psychiatrist, but he was talking to her about living with disease. He wasn't talking to her about dying. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a real failure. And so I thought, well, I could help people get ready for their death. Maybe I could do that.
Oh,
it just dropped in there, but it wasn't anything. It wasn't like a aha moment, you know? It was just like, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think too much more of it. Me and this woman stayed together for the rest of the bus ride, 14 hours. And then later on that night, because she decided to come with me on my trip, I learned that she was in that car that had almost hit me before.
Oh, wow.
I get goosebumps every single time.
Girl,
I tell this
story. This is like a Lifetime movie. Oh, my God.
Completely. So I was like, what?
Yeah.
It really blew my mind. But at the time, it was also just a strange coincidence. It was a beautiful serendipity.
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed that it had led me directly into my life's work. Came back to the States, got really into the idea, started researching it, threw myself in, and then my brother-in-law got sick 6 months later.
Wow.
And he was 43 years old. About 4 months after he got diagnosed, it looked like there wasn't going to be too much more they can do. So I packed up my bags, went to New York, where he and my sister and my niece were, and walked him through the last 2 months of his life.
And that was your first, oh my God.
Along
quote unquote
my,
client.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, here I'm in a personal capacity, mm-hmm. but also I see the work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And what I do now is what I did then, which is, this is a person here. I'm walking alongside them, but I'm also doing my best to hold everybody else up. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing all the errands around the house so my sister can be in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I'm picking up my niece. I'm grabbing his parents' medications. I'm doing all the other things. Mm-hmm. I'm asking the questions. Where's the will? Mm-hmm. Have you picked out an urn? Tough mm-hmm. questions.
Yeah. But
questions we needed the answer to while he was still living.
Yeah.
And then he died, and I got to be there, and it was the single greatest gift, the greatest honor of my life, to be there for the end of his life, because I saw how profound yet how simple this question of life is, mm-hmm. right? We're here, and then in a matter of a breath not coming in or going out, it's then gone.
Yeah.
And his mark has been made. He said everything he'll ever say. He's left the legacy that he will leave. And now all I'm left with is the melody of his life song, right? And so how then do I take that imprint that we all leave on somebody and make it have meaning for my own life? Mm-hmm. So that I'm leaving an imprint that I want left on everybody when my life is over. And then also help me see how broken our system is, mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. much support we actually need. Mm-hmm. Like, it was not working.
Yeah.
It wasn't working.
Right.
So I was like, well, I can do this for other people. You know, I'm already doing it.
I love your language. You didn't say I had to be there. You said I got to.
Yeah.
There. I got to. There's so much gratitude in that statement. I got to be. Your energy, because I'm very energetically sensitive. You talked about being depressed, and one would think that would trigger your depression, but instead you seem like you got grateful.
It gave me life.
Death gave you life. Girl, you better stop.
My heart, it
does when we're open to the possibility.
It does, yeah.
You know, because with it, and every single day is another day that I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Right?
But you get to live.
A day that I get to spend with
my
mother.
Not have to live, but you get to live.
Isn't she amazing?
Like,
no, beyond. The word's not even big enough. And, you know, like, to our audience, like, I'm sorry if I'm like being so selfish about.
Don't apologize for being human, Melissa. Don't ever.
Somebody else
apologize.
Needs to hear what your experience.
You're
is,
reflecting
so
somebody else's experience right back 100%. To them right now.
I went with my mom to chemotherapy, so I spent Christmas in an oncology unit in Toronto, and you know, everybody was there with somebody, you know, husbands with wives. Thanks, Corey. somebody was there, you know, kids with their moms or grandpas or whatever the case is. And so when you get chemotherapy, it's a really long process. It's a couple of hours, you know, and you're just hooked up to this machine and you're just kind of chilling in a reclining chair. And everybody had somebody with them, you know, except this one guy. He came in and he sat in a bed in the same kind of vicinity as me and my mom. And he was by himself. And it just kind of flipped things upside down again for me. Like, we all think to ourselves that when we get sick, you know, like, who will cry when we die? Mm. Who will mourn when we're gone? What legacy are we leaving? And before that, when I'm ill, who's going to hold my hand? Mm-hmm. You know, at my most vulnerable state. And I just, you know, I'm just sitting there with my mom and I'm brokenhearted for this total stranger who has nobody with him, like, while he gets chemo. And this sucks. Like, I just wanted to sit there and like hold his hand, but I had to be there by my mom. And I was just like, what can you tell people who, especially now, social media has everybody a mess, depressed, anguished, anxious. What can you tell people? What's something that you can say or a suggestion that you can give them to start to lead a more purposefully driven life? What's something that you can tell? Because I know that that's what a lot of people are looking for, is purpose. They are looking to either contribute to other people's lives, leave a legacy of their own, and live live moments with purpose and not squander the gift of life? What's something that you can say to them?
This probably isn't going to surprise you, but the thing is that you're going to die.
Okay. I kind of love that.
You're going to die.
Yeah.
You're going to die. And when you do, it'll all be said and done. Yes. And so every moment that you live is an opportunity to leave that legacy. And we often think of legacy in terms of big something like
your name on a building,
money, exactly, a park named after me, something like that. But realistically, it's in every smile that we give, in every eye contact that we make, in every action we take, every word we speak, we're leaving the legacy. Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity remains to do something according to your value system, mm-hmm. that feels right and feels good. It doesn't have to be being the president of the United States of America. It could be okay, we'll leave that one.
Yeah, we could just walk
away. Don't even start, girl. I see my tears actually rolled back into my eyes. We're not crying about that.
Retreat.
A moment averted.
It doesn't have to be that. But it could be something like being a really great mother or being a tremendous cook. Or purpose doesn't have to be our life's work. It could just be that thing that makes us feel really good about being here.
Yeah.
So that when we get there, we're no longer questioning what we did with our time here.
Right.
But who? Okay, so I always ask this. And Melissa loves to help people. I love to help people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of the things that bond us. Who helps the helpers? I always want to ask that, right? Like, you make other people smile. Like, who do you have who's making you buoyant and who's making you happy on those days where you're... Because you're human. Right now, you feel kind of ethereal to me.
Super and I had to very, very human.
I was thinking all these compliments to give you that all deified you. I was like, Blue, she's still a human being.
Very, very
so
human.
So I'm like, on your human days when you are PMSing and you just want chocolate and to be left alone and held at the same time.
Oh, by the way, we have donuts for you.
We have
donuts. Yeah, this. We heard.
I was queuing up to this.
Oh, sorry.
I was trying to queue up to this. You see that? I had a
so
segue.
Sorry.
Okay.
We were going to feed the healer.
Feed me
but first,
donuts.
We wanted to know who heals the healer. You know what, Melissa? Go.
I'm sorry.
So
I have an eyelash in my eye right
Melissa
now.
Melissa has one eyelash about to fall off. Anybody who's listening to us on Spotify or Apple or iHeartRadio, Melissa is trying to put it together. But like, we always forget to bring joy to those who bring us joy. So I'm wondering, like, who is loving up on you? Because I feel like there are people who are going to relate to Melissa. People who are like me, who are like down the hallway from this, who are just like one wrong sentence away from like bursting into tears ourselves, and also like one inspirational quote from like being like you. I'm somewhere in the middle. And there's people like you who are going to feel so much of your strength and your power, but like who probably walk around feeling as if no one's giving that to them. Mm. Who gives that to you? I hope somebody.
Lots of people.
Oh, yay.
My community is strong. My tribe is thick. My mother is still Earthside. My father's still Earthside. They love and support me.
Earthside, I love that.
They're still here.
Okay.
They're still here. They love upon me. They ask me questions. They listen to me. I cry a lot. I eat a lot of delicious food.
Like donuts.
I have amazing friends like donuts, like french fries, and to donuts.
For those who are listening, we're presenting her with her bowl of donuts, girl.
A big bowl.
You're the first person to ever get a bowl of donuts.
I am so grateful. You don't have no idea.
These are the ones that just like give you mustaches and say, you know, so you can eat them afterwards. But they're all, we're going to, when we finish the episode, we're going to go out
there
and enjoy some donuts.
I love that. Keep talking.
Beautiful.
I like this
crew.
Part.
Like, I have great friends. I have a couple of great lovers. I have.
Yes!
Yes!
Realistically, I came home from a very tough death in October, the hardest one yet.
Uh-huh.
I came home, I was confused. I couldn't find the tea in my own kitchen. Like, just everything was upside down.
Whose house is this? Right.
But wait. Without giving, you know, away personal details, can you tell us why that death impacted you so much more than everything else you'd gone through? Like,
she was a mentor to me. I didn't know her well, but she was a mentor to me.
Okay.
But the thing, the real challenge in it was that she was also somebody who was very well known and loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I came into it thinking that I'd be holding space for about 7.
Mm-hmm.
By the time she died, there was like 50.
Oh,
so
wow.
For just keeping the energy flowing, making her wishes primary, caring for her through the process, and also just being present to hold her hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took a lot more than I had bargained for.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
A lot more than I bargained for. Next time I'll call a team to come with me.
What is that like to facilitate the energy of so many beings in the room with the person that is about to, you know, pass over? What what is that like? How do you I know how I facilitate the energy in here. You know, I'm the cameraman, my producer, everybody. I know how to facilitate that. But what does that facilitation of energy look like? Mm-hmm. Did you have to like have people like manage people's expectations of how much time they were going to spend also, with her? Is that one of those things?
That's part of it. Okay. You know, people are there and they're just sitting and holding hands and crying and saying words, but then it's also there's 48 other people, so we've got to move you out so somebody else can come in.
You're gently guiding them away.
Gently guiding them in and out. Mm-hmm. Also making sure that people are remembering that the experience is not about them.
Mm. Speak on it.
It is not about them. Mm-hmm. It's about the person who's dying. And that's something that we so often do. We make it about ourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lose you. I'm not ready to be without you. When the reality is that the person who's dying is losing everybody. Mm-hmm. I am losing one. Mm-hmm. They are losing everything. The mm-hmm. only place they've ever known. All the people that have loved them. We need to keep the focus on the dying. Mm-hmm. They are having their time. Ours will come. And when mine comes, I get to do it my way. But for now, I get to focus on them.
Mm. Real quick, though, not to be nasty, but back to you looking for the tea lovers. And the lovers.
That's lovers.
Yes, the lovers. Yes.
I want to hear about looking for the tea with the lovers.
Okay, so I got home.
It was getting good. No, I appreciate that's you for being your journalistic integrity.
I'm sorry.
But I'm trying to get some tea. You see what I did there?
Absolutely. I appreciate
I can
that.
Find the tea. Hit it.
So I come home and confused. And I had a lot of other work to do. And I thought I'd just sit on the couch for a while, eat some food, take a nap, and be ready. Uh-huh. But hours later, I'm still sitting on the couch staring out the window. I talked to a homegirl. She's like, let me come upstairs. She's like trying to figure out things in my house, bring me some food, just care for me in some way. And she hugged me and we talked and I cried. And there was something missing still. I was like, I need to be held. And she's like, well, I'll hold you. And I said, no. No,
it don't hit the same, girl.
It does not hit the same. I need to be held. Yeah. Like, I need to really be held. Mm-hmm. And so she drew me a bath. Mm-hmm. I got in it. And then I made a phone call. Mm-hmm. And he came over. Mm-hmm. And he pulled me up out of the bath with a towel, rubbed me down with some almond oil, made the tea, sat with me, stayed for a while. Self-care.
I like this story. Yeah. Yes. You know what I love about that story is that it started off with devastation.
Yeah.
And then homegirl, love you girl, but not your back ain't strong enough for what I need right now. And then a man just came and pulled you out the tub and slathered you in the almond oil.
Yeah. I was experiencing that with her.
Anybody else like that? Story time here. I'm here for the food. You see how death can still be joyous and a little sexy? I like that. I don't know if anybody's ever asked you these kind of questions, but I wanted to make space for the woman and the human in you. And you see what just happened, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no,
you
I do.
From crying to laughing with her to a bowl of donuts.
Yeah.
This is what it feels like watching her video.
Oh, a bowl of donuts.
This is exactly what it feels like. The day I watched your video, I literally had the exact same feeling of, like, from crying, like, why are they sending this goddamn video? To, oh, she's smiling out. Like, why is she smiling so much? To, like, man, she seems happy. I'd like to be happy. Like, I had the full range of emotions. And we're going to have to link your videos because there's something about seeing you walk the walk that speaks volumes. Mm-hmm. And Melissa might be having a moment right now, but I promise you late at night, some of this conversation is going to come back to you when you need it the most.
You have no idea. I was brushing my teeth and I was just like, I'm going to keep it together. I am going to be solid today.
Child.
No.
Keep it human.
It's too fresh because I'm still in it.
Yeah.
You know, she's still got 5 more chemotherapy sessions. And then she just sent me a text, my mother, letting me know that the surgeon's board reviewed her case and they think that she's a good candidate for surgery. And I'm like, I thank God that my mother is in Canada because our healthcare system is incredible. That is a blessing. I'm not worried, but I am worried about my 69-year-old mother going under the knife. Mm-hmm. I'm terrified, you know, and so it's still so fresh mm-hmm. for me. And I still don't know my ass from my elbow with this whole thing. There is no resolution here.
Yeah.
Like you said, anything can happen. And I'm just somebody that really likes to be overly prepared. And so I'm suffering because I can't be.
We can't be. Yeah. And we can't control any of it.
Right.
I think sometimes that's the hardest part.
Yes.
Like, this is the outcome I want. This is how I'd like it to go.
Yeah.
And death is a nice reminder that control is a complete illusion.
you're right about that. You know, when I was in, when I had my car accident last year, I knew that, you know, from the impact of the truck and then what happened with my Jeep, you know, starting to spin out of control, and I knew it was going to flip. And I thought to myself, I was like, I'm not going to make it, you know, and there is this peace there.
Surrender, maybe?
It was 1,000% surrender. There was nothing I could do.
So imagine that's what your mother must be feeling like. That same, what you call giving up, it could just be her version of surrender. But that instead of it being a split second before a car flips, it's all these months of choosing not to.
I'm her selfish child who does not want to surrender. I don't. Yeah. Like you said, death isn't, we make it about us. Mm-hmm. And it's not about us. Mm-hmm. It's about them. It's hard to give up on that selfishness, because it's not really, it's not like the selfishness of mine.
It's your,
like,
mommy.
It's like, I want you, totally. I don't want you to leave.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not equipped to keep going.
I think you're doing great.
I think you're doing fine.
And also I want to present something that you said earlier about keeping it together. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what happens when it actually falls apart.
Because I'm laying on my floor.
Very human.
Yeah.
Right. I'm laying human on, beings doing human things.
Yeah, I'm laying on my floor. I'm thinking about alcohol. You know, what's the strangest thing that you feel like death does to people? One thing I've seen is it makes people horny.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
What I've is seen that?
Very. At funerals. I think it's that desire to feel alive.
You want
to
be alive. It's like cutting, but okay. Like with a penis instead of a pair of scissors.
Nice, so bring a date to a funeral.
Melissa, no. You know what? This is where the show goes left. I apologize. Don't bring it. Actually, that might could work.
I don't know.
Oh, man. I don't know. TV show.
I will never look at almond oil the same way. Great. Because of that story.
I'm very happy to hear that.
No, it's the whole planning for your death kind of thing is a very interesting concept, and I never thought about that before my accident.
Mm-hmm. And have you done the planning now?
Mm. Would you do it now that you're?
No, I have not. But I'm closer to what I know I want it to look like. You know, I had a very strange opportunity to attend my own funeral.
Wait, what happened now?
Because some people did not know what happened. They didn't know the outcome. They just heard I was in an accident.
Oh.
Some people were informed that I died. You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And so the response that I got from friends who came to my hospital room, some people flew in. Literally, I had to put my eyes on you. I had to physically see you. Other people called and were bawling on the phone. Like, I don't know how to think about life without you knowing you're here on this planet. It was like being able to see what my funeral would look like and what people would be saying, you know, amongst themselves, you know, and it was beautiful, you know. So I can say, from having a near death experience, kind of hovering, you know, and looking down and seeing everybody digest the information, there's peace that comes with that as the person it's happening to. Great. You know?
Yeah.
And you just want to hold on to that feeling forever so that you make your life full of purpose. Mm-hmm. You live a life full of purpose. You don't spend one second, you know, worrying about bullshit, you know? You just keep on going, and you just keep on living with a sense of joy that I'm here, and you know, like,
and you can also still have bad days,
many of them.
Child, let me tell you, I have lost the need to want to only have good days. I think there's something manic and weird about that. Okay, like it's not normal to only have good days. Mm-hmm. And some of my best lessons and some of the most intimate moments that I've had with people in my life were from us figuring out the bad days together, right? And so, because adversity creates intimacy, I want it all. Like death didn't make me want to have a perfect life. It made me want to have a full life.
And a real one.
A real life.
You know, one that
you get to have days where you cry on camera. Mm-hmm.
Laid on the floor thinking about alcohol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the days when we feel, or I feel, really, really human.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that grief and sadness and death, all these things are opportunities, again, to, like, feel into this human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because what else is the point? We get to feel something while we're here. When we're no longer in these bodies, we can't.
Yeah.
So let's feel, even if it's not sunshine and donuts all the time, but it is like cold tile on my back because I can't hold it together anymore. I still get to feel.
I felt that imagery. You are a wordsmith. I'm sure you have to wield words to get people to... You know what is always interesting when you go to a funeral? And there's that one person, it's usually an elderly woman, who wants to scream the loudest and fling herself
on the
casket.
Yes.
And then you have to drag her off by her kitten heels and yank her.
Kitten heels.
Why is there always that lady? Who is this lady? Like, why does she show up to every funeral? Like, all of them. My aunt's coworker, mm-hmm. who literally had one shift with her a month, decided to be that lady. Like, you don't even know her last name.
Wow,
like why that. Are you doing this right? Yeah, death is... There's some stunt queens at some of these funerals. It's not always grief.
Yeah, it's true.
People put on shows that we didn't buy tickets for.
Absolutely. Right. And that's also part of the
thing. How do you deal with that? Are you the one who has to be like, ma'am, please go off the casket? Are you that person?
Oh, well, yeah. I am.
Ma'am, this is not even the right funeral.
Or walk up to them, put the hand on the back, talk to them a little bit, ask them how they're doing, check in while slowly lifting them and walking back with them.
Why do you have to go? Ma'am, like, he was 93.
Okay.
And, like, we all started coming out.
So question for you. Have you, you've obviously put together your death plan, end of life plan. You have.
Yeah.
You smiled when you said yes.
Would you be okay with sharing any parts
Absolutely.
Of it with us? Okay.
Oh, you want to hear my ideal death?
Maybe? Yes. Oh. Yes.
Okay. So, because I know it has to happen. This is not about me wanting out.
Okay.
I thoroughly enjoy living. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But when my time comes, mm-hmm. I would really like it to be around sunset.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching the colors change. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be watching the colors change again. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be outside. I mm-hmm. want to be able to feel the wind on my skin again. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear the sound of people I love nearby. I don't want people hovering over me necessarily, but I'd like them nearby. I'd love to be able to hear my niece laughing, if possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to smell some frankincense incense
mm-hmm.
Or amber. I like that one a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
I would like it to come in a moment that to me feels very alive, where my senses are engaged
mm-hmm.
so that I can exit this body and exit this like sensory experience having... lived fully in it
mm-hmm.
while I had it.
Wow.
I want to surrender.
And so with the, you know, beautiful. Body that you leave, what do you want done with it?
I want it wrapped in a hot pink and orange raw silk shroud
and
taken to a park someplace where my memorial service will be.
Uh-huh.
And then I would like there to be photographs that I've taken over the years mm-hmm. up and around. I want all my jewelry to be hanging around so people mm-hmm. can take it and put it on and wear it and wear it out so we can get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like there to be some whiskey, Japanese whiskey,
mm-hmm.
music.
Nice.
I want them to play Stevie Wonder. I want them to eat donuts and french fries and delicious things.
Oh my God, I want people
to tell some stories. Please come.
Tell them to send me an
invite.
I don't want you to die. Like, I like you being alive.
I will, one day.
That was so conflicting right now. Like, oh my God, it sounds like a great party. It's her death, dude.
It is.
Man, it was a
so,
lovely.
Yeah,
I want
to be there in a real... really long time from now.
In 50 years from now,
I'll be really old.
They'll wheel me and Melissa over.
I'll be really old.
You know, I want to be a tree.
Yeah, that'd be
I
nice.
I want to be planted into the soil.
Okay.
Well, and, you can have a green burial.
Yeah, right. I really want to be like,
that would be
literally
tremendous.
Have my family know that this tree
is you.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. Everybody in my family's like, we're not making you a tree.
No,
but I was like, no, I really want to be a tree. Like, I want to feed the earth and feel like I'm like there's pieces of me still feeding. Like I don't know why I'm obsessed with this. I'm a Taurus. Mm-hmm. We're an earth sign.
I think that's wonderful. You know what I also think is really wonderful? When people donate their bodies to science.
That is nice.
I think that's a wonderful thing. And it's completely unselfish. It's very, you know, like
forward thinking,
because a lot of people are very attached to the bodies that they will no longer inhabit. So like, what do you care what gets done with it?
Yeah.
You know? And so I think for me, I mean,
what do you want to do? What do you think? Since we've all shared, Melissa, mm-hmm. it was your question. Ahem. Then I have one asterisk that just popped into my head while you were talking.
Okay.
But we want to hear if Melissa's a tree or
I definitely want to be cremated.
Mm-hmm.
And Caribbean Sea. Just toss my ashes out into the Caribbean Sea.
That sounds lovely.
You know, I want my friends, loved ones to go to take my ashes on vacation. I want them to get on
party
a boat.
With the urn? Like, where's the
party
going?
With the urn? Party with the urn.
Only Melissa
on the boat.
And on the boat.
On the boat.
And one last yacht trip with Melissa Ford.
Yes. Really? Yes. That's how I want to go out. Is that. On a yacht trip with loved ones. Get, you know, saucy. Listen to some music. And just share stories about what made you love me so much. And for some reason, everybody loves the fact that my favorite word is motherfucker. They're like, you don't know Melissa if you don't know her favorite word. What is it? Motherfucker.
It really
all right, come on
it
in.
Really,
you know, that's what all my friends and that's what they were sharing about me. Like, you know, like,
oh, wow.
When last year, or year and a half ago. But that's how I would want to go out. Cremated. My friends take me out on a yacht and then spill my ashes in the Caribbean Sea and say goodbye to me like that.
So, so you're at sunset. I'm a tree.
Yeah.
And Melissa is in the water. Yeah. So this is the thing, right? This conversation has taken a lot of very, again, human turns. My question is, have you ever, because we're talking about death as people who are making peace with death. Have you ever had a situation where you're dealing with somebody who's the other side of the spectrum where they're suicidal? And instead of them needing to surrender to death, they actually need to get services. Like, have you ever had that moment where it's not the inevitable, but more so them having other issues that they have to deal with? Because I often wonder, like, when you talk about death, we want to make death seem like a part of life, but we also don't want to make it seem like an escape route. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So what is the conversation with a death doula around that? Because that's a prickly topic.
It's really prickly.
And I know that I just realized that some of the people who are watching this on the show fall into that category. And I'm wondering how they should receive this conversation.
It's a lot of legal implications.
Exactly.
To be talking to somebody about choosing suicide. Mm-hmm. And so I generally don't.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, smart.
I generally don't because legal liability.
Is there a way that you send them off like, hey, go get a therapist? Like,
absolutely.
How do you? Okay.
Acknowledge whatever it is that they're sharing. Suggest mental health resources. Sometimes the kickback is, I'm not mentally ill, I just don't want to live anymore. Mm-hmm. And realistically, you know, it's not my life to live. And so I can't tell anybody else.
Yeah, but you're not Dr. Kevorkian either.
Exactly.
Oh, most definitely not.
Yeah.
No. I mean, we have medical aid in dying here in California, and some people do choose it. Mm-hmm. But that's a different category altogether than suicide. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying that, because I literally saw in my mind's eye, like, that's so Raven. I had, like, a vision of somebody in the comment section, like, she's making death sound too much fun. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always that naysayer who sees a beautiful moment and wants to find the most prickly troll. What up, trolls? We love you too. There's always a troll in the comment section who wants to take it away. And so I wanted you to state for yourself that this is very different than embracing suicide. It's you making peace with death, which are two very different conversations.
Mm-hmm. And also I want to add that making peace with death is such a huge thing to do that is simply not possible for all of us. Mm-hmm. Like making peace with our own death, death acceptance, I think is kind of a fake thing because the brain can't really do that. Mm-hmm. I think the best that we can do is find the gratitude and the beauty and the joy in this already very difficult, painful topic, right? Like often people think, oh, you think death is so great. And I'm like, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I just think death is. Mm-hmm. It is, .. And the rest we fill in.
Yeah.
And you can fill it in with whatever you choose. It could be sorrow and fear and anger, or it could be, wow, how beautiful that my mother got to live to be 70 years old.
Right. I'm sure that there's maybe some people who are curious about, you know, being a death doula.
Yeah.
So your organization trains people as well.
We do.
Okay.
So fun.
Okay. So what we're going to do, and I know that I've been fucking up on the whole link situation. I'm definitely not going to do that this time. Peter, put a pin in that. Okay. Talking to my cameraman. Because we want to be able to provide people a link to Going with Grace.
Please, yes.
Your organization that helps to train people become death doulas and where people can find out more information about, you know, helping loved ones transition. And I can't thank you enough for coming. This has been a long time coming. I'm so happy that you could finally join us.
And thank you for helping me before you even knew I existed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being open.
Okay, I'm going to cry. Oh, no, I'm not going to cry. I almost made it. No, like, this is full circle for me. This is full circle.
You. Is there anything that we do this, you know, server tip of the day where, you know, half and half on that. Right. Like, sometimes we do it, sometimes we don't. But I would love to know if you have anything that you want to leave the audience with, like any, like, anecdotal, you know, phrase or mantra or motto that you live by? Something profound, not so profound.
Well, the motto
eat
that
donuts.
I try to
I
eat all the donuts, have all the sex, have, drink all the whiskey, eat the donuts, have the sex. Just do whatever it is.
Oh,
that
I
your
like
heart,
that list.
Just do it. Yes. Whatever it is that your heart desires, because you're going to have to reconcile with the fact that you did or you didn't at some point. So do it. Yeah. But also, what I guess is more eloquently stated, okay, that same thing. What must I do to be at peace with myself so that I may live presently and die gracefully?
I
what
love that.
What must I do? What must I do? It's not permissive. It's not what would I really like to do. What must I do to be at peace with myself so that I may live presently and die gracefully? Because the two go hand in hand.
That's going to be a static graphic.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that was everything.
Okay.
Thank you, everything. Guys. Thank you so much.
My eyelashes are still on miraculously.
Mine are half off the, on the side that the camera can't see.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much for joining us. And like I said, we're going to provide link information at the end of the episode. I'm not sorry. I had to get it out. But thank you guys for joining us. And I hope that this episode was as profound for you as it was for all of us.
Live fully, guys.
Yeah.
Because you're all going to die.
Exactly. All right.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Take care, guys.
Thank you.